You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. There are a lot of ways to check out the news these days, online and offline, but a lot of people don't. Depending on the study you look at, anywhere from 20 to 50% of Americans say they consume little or no news. In our new research, our next guest tried to figure out why not. What do you think? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you avoid the news sometimes? Why are you listening to us? If so, do you know someone who doesn't look at the news often? Call in at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Edgerly is an associate professor and director of research at Northwestern University's School of Journalism. Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you write in your report on this that anywhere from 20 to 50% of people don't look at the news or don't look at it very often. That's a pretty wide range. But the gist is there's a good chunk of people who are staying away from the news. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so this question was really born out of a lot of my research, which was consistently finding that there's a group of people that just are not making time for news. And while I don't want to cast everybody who consumes news under the same light, certainly there are different preferences, different sources, different types of news that people do regularly seek out, I still was consistently finding this group of people that was very, very low, habitually low in consuming any type of news. And so that really was the inspiration for this project, trying to answer that why question. And what I found were a couple big factors. One related to a lack of value or a gap between how people kind of identify themselves and what they think news would provide. So that's something like, oh, I'm not interested in politics, or I'm apolitical. And they assume that politics is what news is all about. Another one was this lack of relevance. So not seeing how news connects to your daily life or will impact your daily life. And then I would say the other big finding was related to news literacy. People who were not confident in their own ability to tell fact from opinion or know how to verify if something was true, that lack of self-confidence was really suppressing news consumption, as well as I asked people kind of factual questions, like, do you know the reputation of news organizations? Or do you know how Google News is different from other news sites? People that just didn't have factual information to contextualize news, they were also not consuming a lot of news. So it's a little bit of a low value, perceptual value, and a high cognitive cost of doing the work of consuming news.
Well, let's dig into that first point, because if I worked in the media, and I do, I would be really interested in that. There's people out there who feel like the stuff that the media has for them doesn't affect their lives. Is it relevant to them? And that sounds like it could be not a them problem, but an us problem, that the media isn't connecting the dots and saying, this is why the stuff we think is important to cover matters to people. What lessons do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have some responsibility in this problem and taking an effort and maybe seeing what we can do to curtail it. And I would include educators, and I'm one of them in that bucket. But I do think for journalists, it is a question, kind of a gut check of who are you writing for? What stories are you telling? And are you connecting issues that are important, like politics, to people's lives in a way where the connection is really clear? I would say that these tendencies or these feelings are more common among people, younger people, and people with lower levels of education. And so I hope that it really causes some reflection within the news industry about the stories that are told and how you tell them and who you're trying to connect with.
If we can flesh that out a little bit, and I've been seeing this criticism from some media watchers saying, hey, maybe focus less on the politics, you know, who's going to win, Republicans or Democrats in this debate in Congress, and focus more on the policy. If this changes, what does this mean for different groups of Americans, say, if we're talking about national politics, or Wisconsinites, if we're talking about state politics? What does it mean for you? And a lot of people do that kind of reporting. Is that part of the lesson you're taking away here?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a branding problem with the word politics. Mm-hmm. Is just equated with Washington, D.C., bickering, partisanship, and nothing to do with me. And so I think the word politics gets a little bit of a bum rap because lots of things are political. Lots of things impact people's lives. But I really try to steer journalists away from that framing of it. And even when you're talking about something like a presidential address, which is, you know, based in DC and certainly political, how, you know, I resist the urge to really lead with cues that talk about Democrats versus Republicans, liberals versus conservatives, what's happening in Washington. And my recommendation, when possible, is to do the harder work of trying to localize these stories. So you tease out a little bit more of the significance and a little bit more of the connection to people's communities and issues that will affect them.
Talking to Stephanie Edgerly, associate professor at Northwestern University's School of Journalism, about research she's done looking at people who don't follow the news at all or not very much and asking them why not. And some interesting things she heard in response. Now, Stephanie, one theory I've heard, and you address this in your research here, and I've definitely talked to callers who have thought this, people avoid the news because it's a bummer, or it's overwhelming, or it's overwhelmingly negative. What did you find when you asked people about that?
Yeah, this was really, if I'm being very honest here, sort of a surprising finding. I went in expecting kind of the emotional toll of news to sort of push people away. And that's the title, right? The head and the heart of news avoidance. But what I found was that that type of I'm worn out by the amount of news, or news is upsetting to me, really did not predict people avoiding news. And I had to pause a little bit and think why that might be and dig into the data a little more. And what I found was that feeling was common among people who consume a lot of news, as well as people who consume very little news. So those feelings don't differentiate people's news behaviors. They're sort of felt by everyone. And so what I think is happening there is that regular news consumers have a way of managing that fatigue or those upset feelings that doesn't stand in the way of their continued consumption of news. So they sort of have a workaround to deal with the emotional toll of news. Whereas I think for another group of people, these news avoiders, that emotional toll is just too much. And that's why they're staying away from news.
A big thing that's changed over the years is it used to be, you know, you had three major networks and maybe a couple UHF channels on TV, a couple few newspapers in your community, a couple radio stations. Now there's so much media out there, news and otherwise. How does that, that variety, that limitless in some ways variety of media consumption options play into this?
Right? I mean, great opportunities, but also a lot of challenges, right? There is, arguably more news out there than ever before. And at any moment, you can consume news no matter where you are. And that has a lot of positives that a lot of people are able to, you know, really delve in deep and satisfy their curiosity. But at the same time, I think, you know, there's a challenge of knowing where to go, knowing what can be trusted. Information quality is a real concern. And I would say when I do a lot of qualitative interviews talking to people, everybody knows you have to be concerned about information. It's like that message is very clearly communicated to people that you can't trust everything you see on the internet. What is less of a strong narrative is, okay, well, then what do you do? Who do you turn to? Like in a world where you can't trust things, what can you trust? And that's the trickiness, I think, about this media environment.
Yeah. How do you deal with that? Say, if you're coming from this as a media outlet to views itself as reasonably legit, given that when a consumer opens up something that they clicked on, maybe in an aggregator, it could be a legitimate news service, or it could be that weird blurred line. Oh, that's the opinion side of this reporting outlet. Or this is a legitimate thing with a lean one way or another. Or this is some kid in Bulgaria making a living, literally making up stories, you know, which is also a thing. Where do you start with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a problem that there's a lot of responsibility and a lot of action among several different sectors that needs to be taken. I think long-term education becomes a really big key if we want to talk about, you know, how to save the news industry. I think One effort is in schools and in classrooms and making sure that the future news audience understands the value and understands the difference between opinion and fact and knows how to, you know, look for things that more journalistic organizations would have on their site. In the short term, I think we're seeing a movement of media organizations and news organizations displaying a little bit more openly their verification process, how many people they interviewed, how many edits went through this story, why did they select this story. I think all of that helps audiences be able to maybe sniff out when they are reading something that has followed journalistic practices of verification, and when maybe on social media they're seeing something that has an emotional headline and hasn't gone through that process.
In just our last minute, here's maybe a core question that maybe I should have started with. If some people aren't following news closely, so what? What's the damage there?
Right. And I think that's a really valid question. And my answer is twofold on that. One is concerns about the news industry. And there's some evidence that news avoidance or habitually low news consumption is growing. And so if 20 to 50% of the news audience is a news avoider and that is growing, that means the news audience is shrinking. And that really limits the reach and the resources for quality journalism. My other answer is that this gap in news consumption corresponds to gaps in community, local participation and voting. And on one hand, you might say, great, I don't want people that don't consume the news to vote. I understand that. But my kind of pushback is that these news avoiders tend to be lower educated, tend to be younger, also tend to be women. And I really wonder what that says about our communities and our democratic system if there's a particular slice of the population that's absent from spaces of decision making. And so I think it's a problem. And I think it's one that we need to take some efforts in, both journalistically on the education front and audiences, to try to address and try to develop more of the habit of regular news consumption.
We'll leave it there. Stephanie, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stephanie Edgerly is an associate professor and director of research at Northwestern's School of Journalism. We talked to her about her latest research, The Head and Heart of News Avoidance, How Attitudes About the News Media Relate to Levels of News Consumption.